The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, and welcome to Dining with Death, Halloween episode. Happy Halloween. I am Nadja today. This is What We Do in the Shadows. If you don't watch that show, you're missing out. This is, of course, Nandor and Laszlo. And downstairs right now is happening our family Halloween party. What did I mean to say? Our family Halloween party is happening downstairs right now. So we're dressed up for the Halloween party. The only thing I'm missing is my Nadja doll that did not get here in time, and I'm so bummed. But I have a little Halloween story for you today. I know everybody's really busy today, but I wanted to stop in and say hi. So I'm going to turn the time back over to Stacy, and you enjoy this Halloween story. Halloween, October 31st, 2010. I'm back, my friends, with a little short story for you today. I love spooky season so much. And so in some ways, the actual day of Halloween is a little bit of a bummer for me because it means spooky season is coming to an end. But, you know, for those of us who spend most of our time in spookiness, it's not so bad. I know everyone is busy today, so our story will be a little shorter, but I had to stop in and say hello to all of you and wish you happy Halloween. Unfortunately, well, you know what channel you're watching. Today's story is about a family that did not have a happy Halloween. In fact, they had a terrible Halloween, the last day of their lives for some. It was a Sunday, Halloween of 2010. Our story takes place in a rural part of Ohio, Martin, Ohio, to be precise. 16-year-old Devin Griffin spent the previous night, Saturday night, sleeping at his father's house. Halloween had been celebrated the night before, Saturday night, and Devin had been with his friends. He got up Sunday morning and went to church, and then he headed to his mother's house to get ready for the upcoming school week. Just relax for the day. This is Susan Liskey. She and Devin's father were divorced, and now Susan was married to William Liskey. Susan had two sons, obviously Devin, and Devin's older brother, 23-year-old Derek. Susan's second husband, William Liskey, had a son from a previous marriage as well, and his name is William Liskey Jr. He went by BJ. BJ was 24 years old at the time, and he lived in nearby Sandusky. So teenage Devin finishes up at church and arrives at his mother's house. He was planning on going inside, changing his clothes, and then just relaxing for the rest of the day. He set his things down and continued inside. He didn't hear anyone in the house, and he figured perhaps everyone was out running errands, maybe in town. So Devin went upstairs and put on his headset and started playing video games. He played all day long, and when the sun went down, he came out of his room. I find it a little interesting when a teenager can sit in their room for, you know, 8 to 10 hours and play video games and never be interrupted. But this is what happened. When Devin came out of his room, there were no lights on, and his family still wasn't home, and he knew something was off. He walked down the hall and towards his parents' bedroom. He opened the door, and the room was dark. He saw that his parents were still in bed, and this was very strange. He walked to his mother's bedside and poked her foot sticking out from the blanket. She did not move. Then Devin pulled back the duvet, and he saw it. The blood was everywhere. Devin's knee-jerk reaction was to jump and then kind of chuckle. He thought this was an elaborate Halloween prank for just a few seconds. As he looked closer, he still wasn't so sure that his mother and stepdad weren't going to jump up and scare him as part of this joke. But then he knew. The air was too still, the bodies were too quiet, and the smell of blood was in the air. Slowly, a wave of terror washed over Devin, and he realized his parents had been murdered, slaughtered in their own bed, and he had just discovered their bodies. Not only that, he had been in the house with his dead family all day. Devin ran from the house, grabbed his cell phone, and called his Aunt Lori. When she heard him on the phone, she could tell by the sound of his voice that he wasn't joking, and she immediately hung up and drove to the Liskey house. There she called 911.
We need an ambulance and the sheriff to show up, please. Where's the blood?
It's on the bed.
In their house? In their bed?
She said it's in her bed.
Okay. Oh, my God!
Lori?
I don't know. Girl's in the bed. He's dead. He's got to be dead.
Okay. Did it look like maybe he was shot?
Oh, he's either shot or stabbed or something.
Police arrived at the scene and they were shocked by what they found. They had attended some murder scenes in the past, but none like this. Three members of a single family had been slaughtered in their own home. Yes, I said three. Devin had run out of the house before checking on his brother Derek, but the police found Derek Griffin bludgeoned to death in his own bed. Derek was found in bed curled up in the fetal position. He had been killed first. His attacker had gone straight for his skull and used the claw and the hammer to murder Derek. William Liskey Sr. had been shot five times with a .22 caliber gun. Susan Liskey had been shot three times. Police could see that Susan's body had been moved after she was dead. An autopsy would later reveal that she had been raped after she was killed. As the local police investigated the scene and family members began to arrive at the house, everyone had the same question. Where was BJ? Even more specific than that, they wanted to know, where had BJ been when the family was murdered? William Liskey Jr., BJ, was a very troubled young man. He had a history of mental illness and violent behavior. William Sr. had spent a lot of time trying to help BJ, but there was always tension in the house. BJ was angry and he was not well. When William Sr. married Susan and she brought her two boys into the marriage, the tensions increased. Still, William tried to make it work. All three boys, BJ, Derek, and Devin, liked to go hunting. William Sr. was also a big hunter, and he would take all three boys out hunting with him. The family lived on a piece of property that William Sr. called his heaven. They had a nice house, a traditional farm-style house, that sat on 100 acres out in rural Ohio. As often as they could, the Liskey Griffin family would spend time outside in nature, and a lot of that time was spent hunting and fishing. BJ struggled, even though his father tried keeping him occupied. He was a known bully at school. He relentlessly teased other children. He got into fights. He talked back to teachers and principals, and he spent a lot of time in detention. BJ was an unhappy kid. He was an angry kid, and then he was a violent kid. Before long, he was in trouble with the law. William Sr. and Susan met when BJ was about 15. William and Susan worked at the same place, a waste management company, and after dating for a while, they were married in 2001. The marriage made BJ furious, and he hated Susan. He felt like she was cramping his lifestyle, taking his father, and forcing herself into their lives. He especially hated Susan's rules, and he hated her curfews. A year after William Sr. and Susan married, William Sr. called 911 and told them he needed the police. BJ was threatening to kill himself and he didn't know what to do. A couple of years later, in 2004, BJ and Susan had a terrible argument and BJ hit Susan in the chest hard enough that it knocked her to the ground. BJ was arrested for that, and for the first time, he was facing real consequences. Before he'd even gone to trial for that assault, BJ and Susan got into another altercation. He broke a coffee mug over Susan's head and then stole her car. Susan called the police and pressed charges, but the jail brought in a psychiatrist who said BJ was unfit for trial. That is when he was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder. Not long after that, William Sr. had BJ placed in a group living facility for patients with serious mental disorders. BJ's troubles didn't stop even when he was in treatment. He had run-ins with the law and physical fights with other members of the group home. Eventually, BJ went back to live with his family. In late 2004, Susan was taking a shower when BJ suddenly burst into the bathroom and attacked her. And that was the last straw for Susan and for William Sr. They couldn't live in fear like this anymore. That same night, William Sr. threw his son out of the house. BJ was on the streets and alone. He found some cheap housing and would sometimes come to visit the family, but they were never really happy to see BJ. He would take his medication for a while and then stop. And I know this is very common with people that have mental illness. It got so bad that in 2007, BJ was hospitalized. When William Sr. found out that his son was in the hospital, he applied for guardianship and it was granted. William Sr. then got BJ set up at a different group living facility for the mentally ill, but he did continue to allow BJ to visit the family on occasion. Every time BJ visited the family farm, neighbors complained that their pets would die. They were convinced BJ was taking them and killing them. They did not like BJ and they did not want him around. William Sr. continued to take BJ on hunting trips, and when he did, he talked with him about the importance of taking his medication. Sometimes William Sr. thought he was getting through to BJ, but he wasn't. BJ was getting worse, and he wasn't taking his medication like he was supposed to. He was spiraling further and further into madness. On Halloween, when the bodies were discovered, police were sent to search the perimeter of the house. They found muddy footprints leading to a pond on the property, so that pond was drained, thinking there might be evidence there, but there wasn't. Police spoke with neighbors who told them they thought they'd heard gunshots around 6:30 in the morning on Sunday, Halloween Day. But gunshots in this area weren't unusual. It was a very rural area. Then Devin came forward and told the police something. When he'd been in the house earlier that day, he had seen BJ. Then Aunt Lori told the police that BJ had actually been at the house the night before. He had gone over to sleep over and then go hunting the next day with his dad. They were going to spend Sunday Halloween hunting. Lori also told police that the family truck, this red Ford F-150, was missing. She was certain that BJ had killed his family and taken the truck, and she told the police that. Lori said that BJ and William Sr. had spent the 2 days prior to the murder at the family hunting cabin, about 170 miles from the house. They'd come home on Saturday night for something. So the police decided the first place they would look is at that family cabin. They pulled up and found BJ on the porch of the cabin smoking a cigarette. He'd stopped at a Subway on the way back and gotten himself a sandwich. Seems like he was really detached from what he had done. BJ was arrested and charged with 6 counts of aggravated murder, 2 different charges for each family member, and in November, he was arraigned.
New details now on the man accused of murdering 3 family members. He faced a judge this morning in Ottawa County Common Pleas Court. William Liske is charged with 6 counts of aggravated murder. Liske will be evaluated within the next 30 days to see if he's competent to stand trial. The 24-year-old's accused of murdering his father, William Liske, his stepmother, Susan, and her son, Derek. All 3 were found dead in their Jerusalem Road home on Halloween. If Liske is found guilty on all the charges, he could face the death penalty. He's behind bars right now on $3 million bond.
A trial date was set, but BJ then entered a plea of guilty after making a deal with the prosecution. He would plead guilty if they would take the death penalty off the table, and they agreed to do so. The judge sentenced BJ to 3 consecutive life sentences. At his final court date, BJ apologized for killing his family. He said he was mentally ill and that he had been possessed by the devil. I'm just not even going to go into that. BJ's defense tried to make a case for insanity, but BJ was found competent and coherent enough to know the difference between right and wrong. He was sent off to spend the rest of his life in prison. For about 4.5 years, life moved on, and people began to forget about the horrific murder that happened on Halloween. And then the Liske family murder story was in the news again. In March of 2015, a prison guard found 29-year-old BJ dead in his cell. He had taken his own life. I feel quite sorry for the people in this story. I cannot even begin to imagine what it would feel like to have a family member struggle so greatly with a mental illness. I don't know how I would handle that, and I'm not in any position to judge how anyone deals with those things. I think BJ's family did the best they knew how to do. They tried to get him help. They got guardianship over him. They put him in an adult facility. Nothing helped. BJ was mentally ill. We know that because he was diagnosed by doctors. But it also seems that he was very, very angry and mean. I always have to wonder how much of the anger comes from a place of trauma. And the first question that I go to is, where is BJ's mother in all this? I couldn't find a word about her. Has she died? Did she abandon the family? Either of those things can cause trauma and anger. You mix that with mental illness and it is a recipe for disaster. There is no question that BJ was sick, but was he also evil? Thank you so much for joining us today on Halloween, my friends. I hope you enjoyed that episode, and I hope you have a very happy Halloween. It's on a Tuesday this year, so you know you probably celebrated on Saturday, but can we all get together and sign a petition that Halloween just starts being on the last Saturday of every October? No. Wouldn't that be so much better? So much better. But anyways, it is Halloween today, and I hope you enjoyed it. Your support means the world to me. Thank you so much for being here. I hope you liked it and have a happy Halloween. Goodbye.